Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Mark Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on very strict predecided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, so long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. And there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, I appreciate you for your rambling on tonight and sharing with us this disclaimer. We have a first-time caller from New York City ending in 1043. If you'd mind just sharing your – go ahead. Yeah, it's fine. Go ahead and share your first name only, please. Just your first name so I can associate it with this phone number.
Yes, hello. My name is Guy.
Guy. Welcome,
yes,
Guy.
I've actually listened – to your podcast a couple times before, trying to become a very regular listener, but I enjoy all your content, and it's a great learning process, and I'm saving my coins. Definitely drugs that I want to go.
Sure. Well, welcome to the call. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So just to give a heads up for the new people on the call. You press *2 on your keypad to raise your hand for a question. Press *2 for those of you on Freedoms Radio. You'll simply notice to the center right of your monitor, you will have a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left click into that and then type away your comment or your question. Underneath that rectangle, you'll see a place to put your name and other information, then you just hit submit. And we're good to go. Tonight, we have a different kind of call. Tonight, you're going to talk to me. You're going to listen to me. John is, last week, came down with a horrific flu. Actually, his wife started the program. I'm not medically knowledgeable about these things, but something like a Class A influenza. I don't know if that's just a name to get you to pay more for the doctor visit or not, but that's what his wife came down with. She's recovering, but he caught the flu. He caught a cold, whatever, and he has been just miserably in bed trying to recover and at the same time take care of emergencies and needs, immediate needs. So anyways, he's not able to do the call tonight. If any of you remember Froggy, from the 1920s, 1930s, it was Donna and Froggy and the guy with the hair slick up. Anyways, that's what he sounds like. Just can't speak worth a darn. I'm also going to ask, I'm going to pull Kent up here. Kent, I'm unmuting you. And just ask you to chime in with me anywhere you feel like it's you're comfortable talking about some things as well. Can you see, Tess, that you're unmuted?
I can see. Thank you.
Okay, good deal. Great. So tonight I want to give everyone a 30,000-foot view of what I refer to as the team and what goals that we're attempting to accomplish and how you are an integral part of that accomplishment, that end goal. The simplest term is to say that we want to return and restore the vision of our founding fathers, as simple as that. And to effect that without exercising the Second Amendment, if at all possible. And we believe it's possible. We believe that the rule of law is our modus of operandi. We believe that your remedy is in the law. And to that end, we've developed multiple programs to which you can achieve that end goal. You're familiar possibly with the Saturday call that we do with Bernie, Justice Beshear, where he shows you how to insulate and isolate assets through a trust that the Internal Revenue Service recognizes by their legal term, quote, non-taxpayer, end quote, and the corporation soul that you administer through on behalf of your religious society. Now, some people are offended by the term religious society because it sounds like it's religious in the context of what they understand religious to be. When in fact, what we're interested in only for these purposes is what does the IRS say is religious? And the IRS is very simple with it. Any two or more people who agree on a certain set of laws, and that constitutes to them a religious society. So by definition, two atheists, not believing in the Almighty One at all, two atheists comprise a religious society. Why? Because the law that they agree to follow is that of being a United States citizen. Constitutional law and everything that could possibly, any variation and deviation out of that could possibly be conceived, they agree to abide by it. So that constitutes the definition, and two or more people can become a society. The two people don't even have to know each other to qualify. There are people that we have occasionally that say, look, I live alone. I have no children. I have no friends. My parents have passed on. I am by myself. I said, well, do you have a faith that you follow? Well, yeah, I'm a Christian. Absolutely. I said, okay. So do you think there's one other person out in this world that might deem themselves to be a Christian? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no problem about that. Okay, so there's two or more people. You qualify. Next. So I want to share that part with you. Then you have the Monday night call that we do with GW. GW shows you how to correct your status, is a simple term. Within our constitutions, we have two classifications of citizenship. Two. Well, there's more than that, actually, but the two that we need to be concerned with that are pivotal are basically something called a Union State Citizen and a United States Citizen. Remember, Lincoln fought to preserve the Union, yet we're never taught in school about Union States as far as having their own separate citizens, each one. People don't realize that the first person contacted to wage war in the Civil War for the federal government was Robert E. Lee. It was Robert E. Lee that was asked first, and he said, well, we don't know yet if Virginia is going to side with the North or the South on this. I can't give you an answer until they give me the answer, what they're doing. And when Virginia decide to fall with the South in this war, then Robert E. Lee chose to lead the South in this war, the Civil War. So Union State citizens are the ones that our founding fathers first translated from colonists. First they were citizens of colonies, then they became citizens of states, individual 13 states. And as the states were added, so too were added to that class of those number of states that were Union states. The 6 or 8 years after the Articles of Confederation, our founding fathers created, or actually they met in Philadelphia, They took the original Articles of Confederation. They amended the Articles of Confederation. They renamed the Articles of Confederation a Constitution for the United States of America. And in that, they created this small section, Virginia and Maryland, agreed to cede part of their territory, small part, just a little pinch of land, 10 miles within the seat of power, 10 miles between the two of them, 10 square miles, or 10 miles squared, I should say, 100 miles. And in this area, they formulated something called the District of Columbia. It was also referred to as the New Columbia. And this was to have an interface from the several states to talk to the rest of the world. And there were other very limited aspects to it. The bottom line to it, though, was that for those people within that jurisdiction, newly formed jurisdiction, which by definition was 10 miles within the seat of power, all territories, possessions, and enclaves, the Congress had exclusive jurisdiction over. Exclusive. Important word. And just as we were colonists subject to a king, these people in that limited those limited venues were United States citizens subject to the Congress. Was there any difference between those people and the former colonists? No. They were property of the United States. They were franchises of the United States. And, they just as the king could fornicate under consent of the king, okay, other dukes, nobles, and others that he wanted to favor, they could do this to newlyweds on their wedding night. So too, the Congress can do that and has been doing that through various venues since they came into existence. But not until after the Civil War did it really start to become rampant. So as a Union State citizen, you have natural rights. They come from the creator of the universe. They're unalienable, some say inalienable, but they are unalienable. And you cannot be deprived from them. You cannot even negotiate them away. The Congress says that they can be negotiated away. When they created the 13th Amendment, they were very careful to word that to say that there will no longer be any involuntary servitude. They didn't say you couldn't have voluntary servitude. And by contract, all of us at one time or another have volunteered into it, into this contract and agreement to be United States citizens. Point in fact, when we are born into this world, the hospital generates a document that they send to the vital statistics department of that state, and vital statistics makes their database entries, if you would, and then forward that birth certificate to the State Department of the United States. We're in the State Department of the United States. Looking at the evidence that says you're a state citizen, not a United States citizen, but a Union State citizen, they go ahead and put you in the category of being a United States citizen. And then throughout the years, as you move forward in time, getting older, you may ask them for permission to go hunting and get a hunting license, and permission to go fishing and get a fishing license. And you turn 14 and you go to them and ask for permission to get behind the wheel and learn how to drive a car, not realizing that there's also the opportunity that you can just learn to control your private property. And by using the word drive, you are using a commercial term of a word of art. And, you know, it's just insane how they've laid all these traps through words and phrases to get you to agree that you indeed are a United States citizen. Yep, they got you in the right category after all, because you've gone to them for permission to do anything and everything that you've ever wanted to do, including getting married. You know, Americans of European descent didn't have marriage licenses up until and after the Civil War. there were marriage licenses, but the Americans of European descent didn't have them. They were for those people who were of mixed race that wanted to get married. And since no preacher would do that through the reading of their understanding of the scriptures, then they would have to go, these people would go to the government, and the government would give them a license. Now, have you ever looked up the term license in a law dictionary? You'd be surprised what it says. A license is a permission to do that which is otherwise illegal. Yeah. So every time you get a license, you're getting permission to do something that's otherwise illegal. Is it illegal to go hunting for food to put on your table so you don't starve to death? Is it illegal to get married? No, none of these things are illegal. So anyways, all of that is done. So there's a process called correcting your status. And the difference is, and why you should do it, is because the entirety of the Federal Code of Regulations, otherwise known as the FCR, has no application to you because you're not a federal citizen. A federal citizen is a United States citizen. You are indeed a Union State citizen. And the more people we can, you know, educate on this and actually physically convert them to this understanding and having corrected their status, the more people we can put together and assemble, if they will voluntarily assemble, to form grand juries, petit juries, and actually exercise the constitutional rights that we have. And really, there's not a thing that the state can do, or, you know, the United States can do about that, because the United States are our servants. We the people created each of the Union states, and then we instructed each of our Union states through our respective constitutions how to operate for us within that jurisdiction. Then we also instructed them, and the states did in fact organize something called the United States of America, or the United States, in Article 1, Section 8. So where you have litigation for United States citizens in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, for us Union State citizens, otherwise better known as American nationals, at Title 8, Section 15, Ought 2, you'll find that that we operate under Article 3. So any court in existence, and that's all the courts that we're aware of, they're all Article 1, Section 8 courts. And you got no business being in there. We're just now exercising, you know, what the possibilities are here to utilize that tool. And John, who leads the team, who was, you know, to speak here tonight, could be sharing some of that with you. Perhaps you'll join us again next week for that effort. Anyways, so that's the Monday night call. You've got correcting your status, which deals with you physically, and you've got ultimate and asset protection, which deals with properties, et cetera. Utilizing those two crafts, if you would, those two applications, you have become at that time then the free men and women that our founding fathers intended for you to enjoy. Here's something else to understand about this. When the 13th Amendment came into play, they took what was at that time property, okay? I know, cringe, you know, you're saying horrible things, but this is the reality and the truth. It doesn't change the facts. They took this property and translated that to something in law called a person. You see, we the people in by law are not persons. We're not individuals. Those are, again, legal terms, words and phrases. We are the people. Well, that was needed, and the 14th Amendment was needed for these persons to be integrated, if you would, into our society and to have a class of citizenship. They couldn't have natural rights because they had no foundation for those natural rights to come into existence through the, you know, Hebraic Christian thing of things that was the same argument that they had for needing to have a license to get married between two races. But their offspring, the day after the 14th Amendment came into existence. The 13th Amendment came into existence. Their offspring were born in one of the several states of the Union. So, whereas their parents who were born prior to that needed to be have the classification of a person and needed to have something called civil rights so that they stood on level ground, if you would, with those people of European descent who had natural rights, that was only sufficient for them for the length of their life. So when the last former slave passed, so it's what, 1868 was the 14th Amendment, 13th Amendment, and if they lived 100 years, that's 1968. Let's give them 110 years just to cover all our bases, so that's 1978. Why wasn't the 14th Amendment repealed? Because it was no longer needed, you know, for the reason that we were given it came into existence. Because everyone born of a woman on the land in one of the Union states, they were not a person. They became one of the people. And in fact, New York, a Union state, and Pennsylvania, a Union state, both offered former slaves, now 14th Amendment citizens, the choice of actually becoming a state citizen. And a few did, but most of them declined because it was a highly volatile and racist time for the majority of the population. And they felt more safe having federal soldiers to guard them and to provide for them their sustenance, their daily bread, etc. The sad part is that not only were the former Americans that were of African descent who translated into people, they became accustomed to this, and without their knowledge chose, if you would. But so did Americans of European descent as well. And all the other people that are involved in the various, quote, social programs that provide, you know, a safety net and all the other, you know, nice, warm, fuzzy words that make you feel good to know that somebody is there besides your parents to catch you if you fall. But that's what we've come to. And because of that, we have given the United States, this federal territory, possessions, and enclaves, the right to exercise their laws over us. Well, we can change that, and that's what the Monday night call is about. The tonight's call typically is John sharing with us, the various litigations that his students are involved in, where he is teaching them how to stand and understand what they're going through, and how to deal with the application of the constructs that are being brought against them by the prosecutors and so forth, and the appropriate teaching syllabus material to understand and possibly even consider, using a portion of it or all of it, whatever they want as a student, to enter into their own pleadings. And to that end, John has been very successful in helping people, get out of the positions that they normally or otherwise would have been absolutely crushed into. Understand also that when you are involved in litigation, you have, a judge who is a member of the state bar. You have a prosecutor who is a member of the state bar. You have either a public defender or a defense attorney that you hire who is also a member of the state bar. I mean, an allegory is you've got three wolves and a lamb deciding what's going to be on the menu for lunch today. And as sad as that is, that's the reality of it. So you, going in pro per, have greater power and strength in your little fingernail, your small finger's fingernail, than that little tip that grows too long. You've got more power there than all those three combined, because you have the law to exercise. And that's what John and the team assist you with. And when I say this, it's not John by himself. Some of you on the call tonight know that or have seen, you know, if you're a student of one of the members here, where a question will come up, and I'll say, wait a minute, let me get Bernie on the line, or wait a minute, let me get GW on the line, or whatever it is. So it's a team effort. That's what we've evolved into, and it's all for the benefit of everyone that, that wants to, you know, take advantage of that and employ that. Wednesday is a new information provider that we have, Mr. Slevin. He and his in-house team, if you would, have, and they've done this for nearly 20 years and without a hitch, successfully. They have crafted a unique type of LLC that, once organized, enables you to operate and strip all of what would be normally referred to as the income, liable for the income tax, by its unique and exclusive construct. And the point is that we're interfacing this with what Bernie has produced in the past called the Golden Horseshoe, where you can operate through the Golden Horseshoe again and strip all of tax liabilities through a lawful legal arrangement of your affairs. The concept behind all this is that if you do it right, which is first you correct your status always, that's the first step one regardless. After you correct your status, then you can create two charitable religious trusts that each will own 50% share in this LLC. They will create this, this LLC will be created by Mr. Slevin's group, and you can operate immediately through that entity your business. Now, some of that business could be where you're an entrepreneur. You have a shingle out there, or you're on the internet doing this, or you're doing Bitcoin or whatever digital currency, whatever you're having fun with that puts food on your table. And it can all operate through this LLC. So then the LLC, so you're a non-taxpayer by virtue of correcting your status. And you're sitting there, you know, orchestrating all this together. The LLC ends up not having a tax liability, but it's also has two charitable religious trusts that the IRS says is non-taxpayers, so we're good still there. And then once you evolve further into it, then the Golden Horseshoe comes into place, and every entity within that Golden Horseshoe is either or is a non-taxpayer. For within the rules and the jurisdictions that they're operating in. So a corporation soul comes into existence next. The corporation soul creates, which is a non-taxpayer, creates a private interest foundation in Panama under Panamanian law, and the Panamanian laws allow that private interest foundation to create a foreign grantor trust in a country such as Belize, but it could be Nevis or St. Kitts or anything else. I like Belize just because I could walk there if I had to. From Florida, it'd take me a long time, but I would be able to go walk on my feet all the way down to Belize. I couldn't swim to Nevis or St. Kitts if my life depended on it. I just, you know, couldn't stop to anywhere to have a sandwich. And that's critical to me. So you've got a country like Belize that says commercial activity that you do within our country, you must keep all records and pay all taxes timely. But any commercial activity you do outside of our country, it's none of our business. We don't care anything about it. And if you can make millions and billions out there, you know, go for it. It's none of our business. So the Foreign Grantor Trust in Belize creates two children. So I call the first one the parent. And then you've got the boy and the girl trust. These are commercial trusts, civil trusts for that country's jurisdiction. And these two civil trusts, foreign grantor trusts, each one would offer to buy out, if you would, the two charitable religious trusts that were created prior that each owned 50% of the LLC. However, point being is that your money is flowing from a taxable income entity, the LLC, into two charitable religious trusts that are non-taxpayers, into two foreign grantor trusts that are not taxpayers, and that circle brings it all the way back to the corporation's soul having that money in a charitable religious trust strictly for banking purposes. And that money can grow to whatever degree that you want it to grow to. Personally, I'd leave most of the bulk of it that I don't need for operations on a daily basis, I'd leave it in Panama. Keep it outside the banking system of the United States. That's what I would do, where I'm similarly situated. So this is what we've all put together. And there's more. There's other places that we're going to go to. John has several times assisted people in converting their land into a lodium, and we're going to further expand that. It's not what we're doing today on a primary basis. We do have a couple of students that are doing that, but it's not something that we're out there, you know, trying to share with people, et cetera. And that's basically giving you the 30,000-foot view of everything that we have going on. So, don't let me forget. So with all that, we're talking about what we do with people. For the first time, possibly, let me share with you what we're doing with regards to programming and our presence on the Internet, et cetera. Fellow Bob has been the programmer for us for almost 20 years, and he's retiring. There are two programmers. JBJ is one of them, we've got two other programmers that are coming that are part-time right now in this transition, but we will be creating something called Grassfire Communications. We've already created it, actually, but it has to be redefined and rewritten in some places. But you will soon be able to have an additional, just like you can use Hotmail and Ymail and Gmail and whatever else out there that you're using to communicate, ProtonMail, whatever. We will be setting up our servers in Iceland, number one. And Iceland is not under the control of the United States. The Grassfire Communications is a unique tool that enables you to communicate anonymously to other people. You don't know who you're talking to, but what you do know is that they are in a unique and specific venue, and they have checked the box that says they want to talk to anyone about this subject, whatever the subject is, like 30 different subjects. And in doing that, those people who become members of Grassfire Communications to utilize it will be able to network within their community at the grassroots level, even down to the voting precinct level, to network with one another to have the kind of society they want to have. Meaning that if you have a group of people, let's take Daytona Beach. It's Volusia County, Florida. I'm familiar with that area. Volusia County, Florida has a little over 500,000 people, 500,000 people. They have a county council. And, of course, at a breakdown level, there's also cities within that county, and there's city councils, city councilmen and women. So take 500,000, 10% is 50,000, 1% is 5,000. Half of 1% is 2,500. So 0.25% is 1,250 people. Do you think out of 500,000 people, we could find 1,250 people that actually give a care about our rights and liberties within Volusia County? I'm going to answer and say, yeah, I think that's a really low number. And it is a really low number. But let's just work with 1,250 people. What happens if 1,250 people are communicating once, twice, three times a week, and every time that there's a county council meeting, every time that there is a city council meeting, every time there is a school board meeting, I mean, the list goes on forever. Anytime that there's a governmental interface meeting with the public, these people are committed to appear. No matter what it is that you want, you got it. Because you're organized, and you're able to organize just by saying, I want to talk to everybody in Volusia County about this subject here, and those 1,250 people have already agreed that they want to talk on that subject. Now you're sending out an e-blast to all 1,250 of them, and you're talking back and forth. You're meeting with, you're having your group meetings like you're accustomed to through Zoom, et cetera, things like that. Only you're doing it by email. Yes, we will also be writing something like Zoom. Everything that we do is proprietary. That way, in having it proprietary, there are no back doors other than the back doors that we create. And the people that are involved in the programming are very, very limited to people that we believe are going to make certain that nobody interferes with what's going on. In other words, we know that we believe, anyways, that people like Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, have back doors that alphabet agencies access whenever they want. At least that's the presumption. This is where we're going with that. So I think I've just about covered everything. Let's go ahead and open it up for questions. Go ahead.
I think you did a good job. That's why I didn't interrupt you. I thought that was a good overview. I do want to pick up on, well, first let me say that this was not pre-planned. We did not talk about me participating in this call. I just came on about a minute
before. Too, because he's a wild loose cannon on deck.
Yeah, that's right. But if we
I got the mute button, Kent. Kent, okay. I have the mute button here.
All right. If we listen to what Mike said about returning this country to the foundations of our founding fathers, and that we use a rule of law remedy rather than the Second Amendment, we're really talking about reducing confrontations with people that we may disagree with, or people who just don't really understand what our position is. And I have found in my experience, and I've been at this for a long time, and I'm somewhat disappointed in myself that I have not been able to achieve more for the amount of time I've been doing this, and that my win record is not better than it is. However, I have found that this is a tough battle, but that everyone entering this, if you look at it as a battle to change the world, change the country, everyone has some type of gift that they were given by their maker, whoever they believe their maker to be. And it's your job to figure out how to use that gift to make the changes that you believe need to be made. And one of the methods that I use to do that with people is if I'm having a disagreement with someone, and this does not always work in all circumstances, there's other things that have to play into this, I try to show people, I enter a discussion with them, and over the course of that discussion, I get them to agree with me that my goals are quite reasonable. And you find that after you do that, and while a lot of this may seem like common sense, I see a lot of negotiations degenerate into arguments really fast where people don't exhibit the right set of skills in order to get this job done. So by having other people agree with you that what you're doing is quite reasonable, it makes it very difficult for them to then deny getting done whatever it is that you want to accomplish, as long as what you want to accomplish is reasonable. I also ask people, what do you find to be unreasonable about what I say to you? And I can tell you that most of the time, if I've handled it properly and patiently and also listen to what they say, they will tell you, no, that's quite reasonable. I dealt with somebody today that ended up telling me, well, there's nothing unreasonable about what you say. I guess we really need to do something about this problem. So it's logic. It's common sense. It's critical thinking. It's about asking questions. And if I can't get somewhere after a certain amount of time with somebody, whether it's a quote-unquote government issue, whether it's a commercial issue, you know, I ask for their superior. And I try to do that even if at that point in time I'm kind of disgusted. I try to do that with some respect by not telling them that, you know, you're ignorant or something like that. That, you know, but I would really like to talk to your superior because, you know, I don't want to waste everybody's time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, one of the ways or one of the problems that I see with people, and I've worked with a lot of people over time that have had a lot of different situations that they've been involved in, is that they're really here because they just don't, just to use an example, they don't want to pay taxes. Well, if that's why you're here, and the reason isn't much deeper than that about how you live your life and how your family gets to live their life, and your reasons are not correct, your underlying reasons, you know, I can tell you that I've observed over and over again, people cannot get the job done that they want to get done because they're doing it for the wrong reasons. So if you're in this just because you don't want to pay taxes, in my opinion, to my conclusion from what I've seen, you're here for the wrong reason. So the object is to learn how to ask questions, let other people participate in the conversation. If you use that in court, it's very difficult for them to hold you in contempt if you ask questions rather than make statements. I ask people, do I have any control over how you receive, perceive, or process information? If they take too long to answer, I say to them, say no, because I really don't have control over that. I can try and influence them, but, you know, they're the ones that do that. And if they refuse to receive information or how they perceive it or how they process it, well, that becomes their problem, and I let them know that. But I try to do it politely and professionally. So there's a lot of people out there that ask me over time that have a specific kind of case that they're dealing with. Could I give them a spreadsheet with questions on it? And I can tell you that the spreadsheet is good up to the first question, because while you can guess what the answer may be from the bench or from wherever you're going or dealing with, you never know for sure. And so you'll just be confused and befuddled by the spreadsheet. They will know that that's not really you talking, that this was given to you by someone else, and it won't get the job done. You have to develop the ability to be able to do this yourself. Now, I guess this is something, I'm not good at everything I do. I'm not excellent in everything I do. I'm very good at some things that I do. And I guess this is something that just comes to me. It's what I do, and that's how I've kind of managed my life, and I'm just about 75 years old. So I would suggest to people respectfully that they really think about where they come from, why they're there, what they want to accomplish, and how that can best be done. And if it's something, what I do, about asking questions, picking up on what other people say, I said the other day on one of the calls, they'll give you the next 10 questions you need. Ask them a question and let them talk. They'll give you the next 10 questions. If you have to, sit there and write it down. Tell them you have to take notes. Give them some reason why you're doing that, some reasonable reason. And a lot of times, people will go along with you. So, I don't know. This comes to me naturally. My parents, who are now deceased, told me that ever since I was a kid, I asked questions. I challenged authority. But I do believe that even if that is not your physical or mental or spiritual makeup, that there is a role that everybody can play in this movement. And that's what I would have to say about how this plays into what Mike is doing and the people he presents and getting the job done. Because nobody else can do the whole job for you. You need to participate yourself. Thank you.
Yep, good comment. Thank you. I appreciate that. So let's go to the questions and answers. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 to raise your hand. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, again, you'll see to the center right of your monitor that silhouette of a rectangle. Just type away your comment or question there. Underneath that, put in your name and other information. Just hit submit, and I'll read it up on my end. If you don't have any comments or questions for me, ladies and gentlemen, we're all going to go to bed early tonight, which you couldn't twist my arm to do that. Press star 2 on your keypad, and we'll see what we do. Hello? Let me check Freedom's Radio while somebody thinks about pressing star 2 on your keypad. Refresh. Nope, nobody there. Do you want to really stop the call now? Any thoughts or questions? If not, we'll say nighty-night. Going once. Going twice. Thank you all for joining me tonight. Sure you don't want to press star 2? All right. Until tomorrow night, join us. Whoa. Here we go, Brent. Here we go, Ron. Okay. Go ahead, Brent.
Well, seemed like nobody else was going to extend the call, so
nope.
I didn't want you to go to bed too early, you know.
Thanks.
What caught my ear from the conversation I heard earlier tonight on this call was what you're doing with land patents. And you also made it very clear you're not really doing that yet, but that's pretty much my comment. I'm very interested in getting some assistance in that arena.
Well, let me clarify. We are doing it. We have two students right now that we're processing them out of the, quote, United States. You know, if you're a New Yorker and you live in the Union State of New York, there's really no property taxes. You own your land. You own it in Allodium. But what we're wrestling against is this territory known as the State of New York, which is a subchapter corporation of the corporation known as the United States. And so John has two students for that. I see one of them on the call here. I see if it's the other one. Nope, just one of them is on the call tonight. And we are doing that. If you want to move forward with it, we can go ahead and get started with you. And we'll go from there. Anything else, Brent?
No, that's it.
All right. Thank you so much. Next is Ron. Go ahead, Brother Ron. Ron, are you going to serenade us with your radio?
Yes. Hello.
Hello. What's up?
I just wanted to thank you very much for the call last week with my brother. It was very informative. Very informative and very helpful. It got him to thinking on a different track than what he was. He was on me attitude and has looking at things a little differently.
What you're not understanding, ladies and gentlemen, is we canceled the call last Wednesday night simply because history has shown that, you know, Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, Passover Eve, Eve of Easter, New Year's Eve, nobody shows up. They just don't. So I went ahead and gave Mr. Slavin the night off. So I stood on the call to just wave people off. And I saw Ron there, and I just, you know, was saying hello, and he's got his brother there, and we just started talking. And basically I gave him the 30,000-foot view, but focused on asset protection. And that's what he's talking about. So you're welcome. Glad to do that. Anything else, Ron?
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
That'll be all for tonight.
And you all have made me feel a lot better now. Thank you for raising your hands. I don't feel like I completely bluffed it up tonight. Until tomorrow night, strongly encourage you to be there. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.